Psychiatrist Kyle Pruitt wrote a book called Father Need. And he says there's an inevitable, an undeniable linkage between fathers and babies that begins at birth. Infants as young as 6 weeks old can differentiate between a mother's voice and a father's voice. Infants are born with a drive to find and connect with their fathers. As they begin to speak, their word for father often precedes the word for mother. Teenagers express father's need in yet more complex ways, like competing with their fathers and confronting his values, beliefs, and of course, pushing all limits. For so many sons and daughters, it's only at death, at the death of their father, that they discover the intensity and longevity of the father need, especially when it has gone begging. In his book, Bringing Up Boys, Dr. James Dobson says, children may not remember what you say, but they usually are impacted for life by what you do. If you blow up regularly, insult your wife, drink to excess, your kids will be at risk of chemical substance abuse. And if you cuss, smoke, fight with others, are argumentative, physically and verbally abusive, your children will follow suit. If you're selfish, mean, or angry, you'll see these characteristics displayed in the next generation. But if you're honest, trustworthy, caring, loving, self-disciplined, God-fearing, your children will be influenced by these traits as they age. If you are a deeply committed follower of Jesus Christ and live by biblical principles, your children will probably follow in your footsteps. But so much depends on what they observe in you, for better or worse. Andrea Licato wrote, she said, I have seen my dad pray on countless occasions. He prayed over meals. He prayed over my two sisters and me before we would go to sleep. He prayed over our cuts and bruises from falling off our bicycles. He prayed for us in the car on the way to school when we moved away from home. He prays for us over the phone, and now he prays via text message. He sends these messages early in the morning. I've seen him pray alone, with friends, my mom. And the question of the day is this, dads, have your children ever seen you pray? I thought that's a great question for the third week of our current message series called The Struggle with Prayer. Because maybe for the guys here like me, maybe you at times struggle with prayer too. In this series, we've mentioned that for a lot of people, prayer is awkward. For a lot of guys, they believe that praying is women's work. And unfortunately, that's what was modeled for a lot of guys. And lest something change, that'll be modeled for the next generation. You can tell a lot about a man and his relationship with God simply by listening to him pray. How comfortable they are praying. And how well they are acquainted with who they're talking to. Among the list of the men that have greatly influenced my life are men that were men of prayer, and most influential, obviously, my father. A few days ago, I observed my father telling a friend of mine a story, and it brought tears to his eyes of how God answered his prayers for safety and protection on a trip that he and my mother and my sister took recently. Before we would ever leave on a vacation as a child, my father would always pray that God would watch over us, protect us, keep us safe. And even to this day, if we're going anywhere, I just know we're not going to pull away until one of us prays. One of those moments in my life that I will never forget is as a goofy little kid bursting into my father's office one morning and finding him knelt down by his chair praying. If your children were asked today, could they say they ever heard you pray? Or would they say, I've heard Dad invoke God's name many times, but it wasn't in a reverent way? A man by the name of E.M. Bounds, who was from a little town up in northeast Missouri called Shelbyville, maybe some of you have heard of it, has written volumes on prayer. If you ever get a chance to read any of his work, one of the greatest things that ever happened to me was, this was a required reading one time in my life, that I needed to read his works on prayer. Written in the 1800s, still profoundly impacts my life today, in a book, in a section of his writings called Purpose in Prayer, E.M. Bounds writes, praying women and children are invaluable to God. But if their praying is not supplemented by praying men, there will be a great loss of power of prayer, a great breach of depreciation in the value of prayer, great paralysis in the energy of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Jesus spoke a parable telling that men ought to always be strong in prayer, never yield to discouragement, weakness, or depression. And men who are brave, persistent, illustrious in other pursuits ought to be full of courage, unfainting, strong-hearted in prayer. And I thought of what is this one simple principle that I could offer dads and men to take away from this Father's Day gathering and this series and the struggle with prayer. And I thought of the encouragement that were given to first century followers of Jesus Christ in Paul's letter to the followers of Jesus in Colossae. In the New Testament, it's called Colossians. And there's this one little phrase in toward the end of the letter you would find in chapter 4, Colossians 4:2. It's a very simple statement that Paul told them to devote yourselves to prayer. Now, I have to tell you, I have just really this week's tried to think of and search and dig even through the Bible of illustrations I could give you of fathers that prayed with their children. I found a lot of fathers that were just like you and me that didn't do it all right and made mistakes and were flawed. And sometimes because of their lack of attention to their own children, saw their children do some things that were just heart-wrenching and heartbreaking. But then I thought of these words of that Paul wrote to people that were trying in their everyday, ordinary lives, who didn't even have a Bible. They had the old, what we would call the Old Testament and the law and the prophets, and those things that God had said were God-honoring, and that they were to live by certain disciplines that would be good for their families, that would be good for culture. But they didn't have like these New Testament letters, the Gospels. And they were just trying to figure out in their everyday, ordinary life what it looked like to live this out of this transformed life of being a follower of Jesus Christ. And a very simple encouragement was, devote yourself to prayer. The word devote in the original language means that it's just something steadfastly you give care and attention to. That you just are consistent in it. That it's something that you don't discard, that you persevere in, that you show yourself to be consistent in. And I'd like to tell you that every day of my life, I always do this really well, but I would have to tell you that I don't. There are some seasons of my life that I feel like I do this really, really well, and there are some other seasons that I feel like I just really struggle with prayer. But if your children saw these words, would they say that describes my father? That he was devoted to prayer. It's kind of the same concept that you find in another one of Paul's letters that we kind of talked about at the outset of this series, where Paul writes to the church at Thessalonica, another set group of people, again, trying to figure out what it looks like to be followers of Jesus Christ. And he just encouraged them to pray continually. Some of you might be more familiar with the idea where it talks about pray without ceasing. It's just that God consciousness that relates to everyday, ordinary life. That we're just responding back to Him. And it's difficult sometimes, I think, to accomplish this, about this God consciousness that we just play out in as part of our everyday, ordinary life. Because I think a lot of people compartmentalize their life. Especially for guys, I think that it's difficult because we compartmentalize our work life, and then we have our recreational life, and then we kind of even maybe have the secret life, and then we have our church, religious, and God life. But this idea of being devoted to prayer, praying without ceasing, pray continually, is this idea of living every part of our lives, every aspect of our life. Not that we relegate God to just the emergencies, the crisis, the disasters, for an hour on weekends if there's not a better option, but that we include Him in every aspect of our life. That we live with this reverence of the Creator, that He's not reduced to just some cosmic force, that prayer's not like the ATM, that if you happen to remember your PIN, that God is obligated to deliver. And I realize that there's a lot of guys that are turned off by prayer, because they've seen so much over the course of their life, hypocrisy. The people can get up and just pray incredibly eloquent prayers and then be such jerks. That they could just cuss like a sailor and then offer these incredible, great, illustrious, verbose prayers. People are going, which is which? Jesus talked about that in the Sermon on the Mount, and He talked about being careful not to practice your righteousness in front of others to be seen by them, for you have no reward from your Father in heaven if that's what you want to do. And He moves on, and you find in Matthew 6, verse 5, He says, when you pray, I like that what He says, when you pray, don't be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues, on the street corners, to be seen by others. The religious professionals in that day had just wrecked prayer. The people they looked to for their examples of how to communicate with God and that role that he played in their lives had turned it into a show. Just they would pick certain days when people would be at the market and they knew crowds would be there, and they would stand up and offer the prayers, like the guy that went up to the temple to pray that Jesus talked about and prayed about himself. Oh, Lord, I'm glad I'm not like other men. And Jesus said, I tell you that if you've received your reward in full, if that's what you want. But as you move on down to verses 6 and 7, he says, when you pray, go into your room, close the door, and pray to your Father who is unseen. He says, then your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. And when you pray, don't keep on babbling like pagans, for they think they will be heard because of their many words. And throughout this series, we've talked about kind of what prayer really is. It's that idea that I'm responding back to God. To elaborate, Tim Keller in his book, Experiencing God and Intimacy with God, his work on prayer says that prayer is responding to God. In all cases, God is the initiator. Hearing always precedes asking. God comes to us first, or we would never reach out to him. Prayer is continuing a conversation that God has started through his word, his grace, which eventually becomes a full encounter with him. I've read a lot of stuff as I prepared for this series about the struggle with prayer. Dr. John MacArthur says prayer is God's provision. It's not man's idea. It's God's idea, not man's. And when Jesus talked about praying, he used the word when you pray, which implies a lot of great latitude. No prescribed time, no certain position, no certain location. And a lot of people think sometimes, well, you need to go to a certain place to pray. And then notice the contrast when he talked about when you pray, a lot of latitude, a lot of freedom, no prescribed time, no certain words. He changes it from a performance to a conversation. And his idea of prayer was getting it this conversation off of yourself and turning it back toward God. Having a conversation with the one who knows us best, with whom nothing is hidden. It's not about cliches, repetitious phrases, worn out words. And I always think about sometimes, how hard is it to pray without using certain religious words? Could you pray without using the word bless? And just that we didn't use the same old cliches, repetitious phrases, worn out words. Because God's more interested not just in repetitive phrases, religious sounding words, magic formulas. He's interested in the honest, sincere heart that seeks him, his wisdom, his guidance, his direction, a desire from the heart to please him, to adjust our lives to his desires, and a heart that desires God more than God accommodate us. Prayer is that understanding that a holy God who knows us better than we know ourselves, where we respond to him in trust, knowing no matter what's going on in our lives, he always has our best interest at heart. And just beginning to understand that prayer is this really enjoying and understanding that a holy God actually welcomes flawed and sinful people and to fellowship with Him. I love to hear my father pray. I miss hearing my grandfather pray. I have some great friends that I pray with. And I hope you have somebody that prays for you and with you. I have loved those moments when I have the opportunity to pray with and for my children and grandchildren. But have your children ever heard you pray? Was it difficult? Was it awkward? Do they even know that you pray? Would the way you live your life demonstrate that you are a man devoted to prayer? Have you ever put your hands on your children? And this applies, I would just say, to guys and gals as well. But have you ever put your hands on your children and blessed them? And prayed for them? And I would just say, even beyond dads, grandfathers, some of you men who have been around this church that are loved and respected, that young people look up to you and love you and admire you, do that. I am so grateful for those people along the way who blessed me. There's nothing magical about it. It's not like, you know, the Disney person, you know, that comes out and you get this stardust and all of that. But there's just something special when people actually touch you and pray and bless you and encourage you in your own spiritual development. I still remember so often, and I would just think, "You are just nuts, Grandpa." But he would put his hands on me and say, "I just know one of these days, God's going to call you to preach." I was like, "Oh, please, anything but that." But we remember those stories from the Gospels when people were bringing their little children to Jesus to place His hands on them. The disciples rebuked them. And when Jesus saw this, He was indignant. And He said, "Let the little children come to Me and don't hinder them. For the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these. I tell you that anyone who will not receive the kingdom of God, I tell you anyone who will not receive the kingdom of God like a little child will never enter it." And then it says in Mark 10:16 that He took the children in His arms, He placed His hands on them, and He blessed them. And in that culture, in that day, parents often sought the blessing of prominent rabbis for their children. And in that culture, for a rabbi to call someone out and say, "Follow Me." What it was is they lived their lives, the teaching was so admirable that somebody aspired to be just like them. And my question would be, as I kind of try to pull all this together and wrap it up this morning, is, would you say, dads, and this is sometimes even hard for me, and this idea that blessing our children, would you say that you live your life before God and your spouse and your children and your grandchildren, your neighbors, your friends, in such a way that people would aspire to be just like you because they know that you are a person devoted to prayer? Have your children ever heard you pray? Do you live in such a way that compels your children to be just like you, especially being devoted in prayer? And then I'm going to ask one last question, and then we're going to do something different to finish up this morning. If your children prayed for you today, what would you want them to pray for you? If your children were praying for you, what would you want them to pray for you? And we're going to finish with a little different kind of prayer on Father's Day.